Well, hello everyone. I'm Jill Bloom, publisher of Roofing Contractor, Walls and Ceilings, and Building Enclosure. And thank you so much for joining us, whether you're listening or watching. It's exciting to have summer arrive, and it's pretty hot in a huge part of the country, which we'll be talking about as well shortly. But first, let me welcome Trent Cotney, the CEO of Cotney Attorneys and Consultants, with us here today, and also Art Eisner, the editor of Roofing Contractor. Trent, thank you so much for joining us.
Jill, Art, it's great seeing you guys. Always a pleasure to be able to talk to you.
Well, we definitely, it's an honor to always have you on as much as we can, Trent, because you've got such great insight. And we were just talking about some of the biggest pressing issues happening right now that's taking up majority of your days. But can you give us an update?
Sure, absolutely. So the supply chain issues continue to be the dominant issue, you know, from a legal standpoint right now. And those issues come up in a couple of different ways. It's either, you know, material price increases or increased lead times. You know, we've had nightmare scenarios where prices have gone up. I have, you know, one contractor where they're looking at a $250,000 price increase. You know, I've got another contractor where I got involved. I had to contact the manufacturer and I said, hey, you know, when can we expect these materials? And I knew the person on the other side. We got a great relationship. He said, hey, we'll be opening Christmas presents by the time you get this. And that's not what I want to have to tell the customer. So, you know, some advice that I would give the listeners, and I've talked a lot about this. I feel like, you know, some days it's all I talk about. But, you know, one of the things that I have found that is most successful when you are faced with these issues, and I really like everybody to pay attention to this part, because working with your distribution and working with your manufacturers will help you tremendously. And what I like to do is I like to go to the manufacturer or the distributor or both, and I like to tell them, look, I understand what's going on here. And the reason we are facing these issues, there's a variety of reasons, but a lot of it has to do with just-in-time inventory. And this is an idea where you keep inventory as small as possible and you only order as needed, okay? And a lot of the component materials that are used to make roofing products kind of fit the bill there. So if you have one disruption, it causes a ripple effect that has devastated the industry. And we are seeing that. Some of that was caused by COVID, some of it was caused by, you know, the storms we've had, the refinery shutdowns, whatever it might be. But we're kind of dealing with these issues now. So when I am talking to a contractor that has this issue, what I like to do is I like to say, look, if the customer is happy, you are happy. That's all you need to remember, right? Pointing fingers at everybody else is fine, but it doesn't solve the big problem, which is keeping your customer happy. So what I like to do is I like to go to distribution and I like to go to manufacturers and I like to say, hey, you've got to help me out. Here's what I need from you. Okay, I need a letter that says this was unforeseeable. Okay, this was unforeseen. Better yet, this is a force majeure. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get them to track the language that is identified in the customer contract. So I can take that documentation, give it over to the customer with a change order and set the stage, explain, look, here is what's going on. Okay, this isn't me just coming up with this. Okay, this is straight from the manufacturer's mouth, straight from distribution. Therefore, I think I'm entitled to a change because this is unforeseen, okay? And obviously it gets a lot more detailed than that, but the idea is I've had a lot more success navigating these issues by flying in formation than I have by, you know, divide and conquer. That is the message I would send. If you're trying to navigate, the only thing you have to worry about is keeping the customer happy. That's it.
Trent, how receptive are the other industry stakeholders to that? And is that process, how difficult is that process to get a letter that you're talking about? Does it have to go through those appropriate legal channels?
Yeah, and it depends. You know, a lot of them are putting out those letters already. Like I get notifications from, you know, both distribution and manufacturers, and I'm on the same email list that contractors are on. I see a lot of that great language in there. But a lot of times, you know, what I like to do is work with the sales rep, work with the tech rep and say, hey, this is what I would like it to say. Can you help me? Is there anything that you can help me with regard to this project? And a lot of times they're willing to work with you because they're in the same boat, right? They didn't cause this. They want to be able to assist the end user, right? So oftentimes they are open to having those kinds of conversations. And really, the only thing I'm looking to do is have documentation that accurately reflects what we're all going through right now. I'm not asking for miracles. I'm just saying, tell me what's going on. Give me something that I can pass on to the client. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a check stroke to you or additional time. But what it does do, Art, is it helps you set that stage for negotiations. It helps you explain the issue. So it's not just coming for you saying you want extra money. You can point downstream and saying, you know, this is an event that we have never seen before in this industry. It has absolutely affected every single aspect. You know, here's some links to news sources on it, you know, and what you do is you put all that together, combine it with your contractual terms, and then you're setting yourself up pretty good for negotiation.
One more follow-up on supply chain. Is it time to change that just-in-time inventory philosophy, and how possible is that?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. You know, we've been operating under that. You know, I've joked around all the time with here, you know, inventory kills, you know, and that's the saying everybody says. You know, you got a bunch of inventory, you're sitting on it, it's not making any money. You want to be able to order as little as possible, not tie up your cash, tie up everything else. But this raises a lot of very interesting questions. You know, if I am a manufacturer that is dependent on a resin that's being sourced in a place where I can't get it anymore, what do I do there? You know, I would probably look at a strategic plan that looks at maybe stockpiling some essentials just so that I can continue functioning. Because look, if I'm a manufacturer and I can't get source material to make product, I'm not making product, which means I'm not making money. And that's how you got to look at it. So there's a little bit of a gamble. The good news is that gamble has paid off for a long time now, right? But when something like this happens, it shows you this is the downfall of the global interconnectedness of our economy. We've always seen the upside of it. This is the potential downside. So, you know, I think as part of a strategic plan, I would consider, you know, maybe switching that up a little bit and maybe stockpiling a little bit of the key source materials that you need to produce products. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Switching gears a little bit to the other major issue of the day emerging from COVID-19. The EEOC recently posted new technical guidance on how federal laws apply to those incentives offered by employers who want to confirm vaccinations. What do contractors need to know about that? It sounds complicated.
Yeah, you know, and the EEOC, the guidance that they put out, it was not the easiest to necessarily understand. But when you dive down into it, really what they are saying is there's nothing wrong with mandating vaccines, but there are some caveats. And we've talked about these caveats before. You have to be sensitive to people that may have medical issues that would prevent them from getting a vaccine. You have to be sensitive to people that don't want to have a vaccine for religious purposes. But, you know, asking whether or not somebody has been vaccinated does not violate the ADA. Okay, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to violate HIPAA. Well, HIPAA is really the wrong act. HIPAA deals with privacy from a medical standpoint in a hospital or a healthcare facility. From an employer standpoint, we're concerned about ADA, right? The American with Disabilities Act. We're trying to make sure that we don't ask for information that would otherwise be confidential or would put them in a position to where they feel discriminated against based on the ADA. So there's nothing wrong with that, okay? And then they went down further and they identified some other acts, GINA, which deals with genetic testing and things like that. It says, does it violate that? But the key thing to remember is that when you are creating voluntary incentive programs, you want to be careful and you want to work with your third party benefits provider in figuring that out. You know, there are ways to do it to where you are not creating disparate treatment or, you know, potential discriminatory practices. And I think what the EEOC did was just kind of solidify a lot of the guidance that we had kind of heard out there already. Again, they probably could have done a little bit better job in spoon feeding it, but you know, what can you expect? So,
are you hearing questions from contractors, you know, with some confusion still about CDC guidelines, masking, and vaccinations?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're putting out some guidance on that to kind of assist. The guidance is out there. Okay. The CDC has been fairly clear in what their guidance is. And that is that if you're vaccinated, in most situations, you don't necessarily have to wear a mask. There are certain situations where you have to still, like a plane, for example. Okay. But private entities can have more robust regulation than what the CDC offers. And a lot of times we see state or local requirements that may extend beyond CDC requirements. So I think a lot of the confusion is created by these private entities. So, you know, some hotel chains are following CDC guidance where other hotel chains are still, you know, under previous guidance that requires wearing a mask at all times. I'll be honest, I'm a little confused. You know, when I go out to eat, I always carry a mask on me, even though I'm in the state of Florida that has been pretty much wide open forever. You know, just in case, I'm not sure what, you know, do I have to wear a mask to get to the table or is that not a thing anymore? So I would tell everyone that as far as the federal guidance, it has not changed, it is the same, but the application of that guidance may differ depending on your state and private entity requirements.
Okay, thanks, Trent. You always seem to feel the heat down in Tampa. We're starting to feel it with a pretty serious heat wave here in the Midwest. And of course, it's reflecting in other parts of the country. Can you talk about the dangers of heat to roofers from a liability and a safety perspective?
Absolutely. So heat injury and illness is something that we take as serious as we can take it. And this is about the time every year where I start getting phone calls. And ironically, the calls come from up north or come from Chicago or come from Minnesota or areas that aren't used to the heat as much. Now, we see heat injury, illness, fatigue, things of that nature throughout Florida and, you know, California and Texas and, you know, Phoenix, those types of places. But it always catches people off guard, especially if you have a heat wave. And I know the Northeast in particular has had a lot of really warm weather, as I know you guys have up in Michigan. So, you know, the one thing that I would want to hit home to our listeners is take this opportunity to do another toolbox talk on heat injury and illness. Now, OSHA has said that they're going to come out with some additional rulemaking on this. So I do anticipate that later in the year, there might be some changes. But in the meantime, you know, do some training on it. Make sure that your crew leader, your foreman, your superintendent has the capability to identify the signs of impairment, right? The signs that someone is affected by heat injury. And that's critical because it sneaks up on you. If you're not hydrated before you get on that roof, it's too late, okay? Because the not just the heat that's coming down on you, but the reflective heat off of the roof system, it is tremendous. So you definitely want to do that. Make sure that you are taking regular hydration breaks. Absolutely critical. Make sure that water is plentiful on the job site. Has to be enforced. There are a lot of people that want to work through it. You have to take those breaks, and people have to watch out for the dizziness, the signs of impairment, you know, that they are not capable of functioning, and make sure to take it. We have multiple fatalities every single year that we're involved in that deal with heat injury or illness. So I can't stress to people enough, do some more training right now. Okay, the heat is there. It's getting up there. It will sneak up on you.
Thanks, Trent. Good insight. And as you mentioned, if there's some more rules coming from OSHA, you can certainly depend on some more enforcement coming from them. I wanted to turn to some recent news we published on roofingcontractor.com. We've noticed reports of violations, criminal charges, and even business bans going into effect in Kansas in particular, indicating some stepped up enforcement. Is there anything particularly interesting happening in Kansas, and what should other contractors take note of?
So I am licensed in Kansas and I practice there, and I can tell you that Kansas has a registration act for roofers. It's very similar to licensure here in Florida and other places where you have to register, you know, as a roofing contractor. And I know in the instances where you guys did a great job reporting on it, there were some problems where roofing contractors weren't registering, and they were also had issues with abandoning the project and other problems that were out there. And I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a concerted effort by that agency to enforce. So the message to listeners would be, if you work in multiple states, and I know many of our listeners do, you know, if you work in multiple states, you really want to be careful when you cross that line. You know, you could be working in Texas one day that doesn't have any kind of requirements, and the next day you're in Kansas, could be a different deal. Okay, so very important that you understand what the licensing requirements are, what the permit requirements are, and follow them, because you will get agencies that like to make a point out of contractors, you know, and I think that's kind of what we're seeing right now in Kansas.
Okay. Trent, it is also the NRC's National Roofing Week. What are you hoping roofers kind of remember about what's important about the profession this week and the importance of telling others about it?
So I think this is great. You know, both NRCA and CRCA, the Canadian Association, are engaged in Roofing Week, and we're actively participating in it. Every day there's a different thing that we post about social media or this, that, and the other. But the thing that I like the most is there's a charitable aspect. Actually, today is the Day of Charity. So to me, philanthropy is incredibly important. Giving back to the industry that, you know, has put food on my table and my employees' tables, I think, is paramount. So one of the things that we're doing that we're proud to do is I serve as a trustee for Chicago's CRCA's foundation. And we're putting out something where we're going to match contributions up to $1,500 to get some additional money for that foundation. Obviously, I contribute personally to almost every foundation that's out there, but we wanted to use them in particular because they do some great work with scholarships and with some, you know, charity roofs that they're doing. So the thing that I'm always most excited about is the opportunity to give back. That's the one thing that I enjoy the most about any of, you know, Roofing Week or otherwise. So I'm excited about that.
Appreciate you for that, Trent, no doubt. What else is on your mind this week?
You know, Art, I read a very interesting thing, and I've been getting this report from a lot of roofing contractors. And this is something that it kind of caught me off guard. And maybe it's a generation thing. I don't know what it is. But I read a recent stat that said that 52% of current employees are looking for another job. And almost 60% of millennials or younger are currently looking for another job. And the justification for that was COVID, that it has gotten rid of a lot of the camaraderie that normally you would see in an office place. A lot of people are looking for a fresh start. A lot of people just believe it's time to do something different. You know, and what I would advise the contractors that are out there, not as big an issue with, you know, crew and labor, that's difficult to find in and of itself any day of the week. But for your home office, you know, just be aware. It's don't take it personally. It's going to happen. And recognize that I think it's a sign of things to come. You know, I think you've got a lot of people now that are feeling disenchanted after COVID-19 and continued engagement with your employees, trying to keep them still in the mix is something that you should definitely focus on, because I anticipate we're going to see a lot of that.
Very good, Trent. Thank you. Well, one thing that there's no doubt, if people are looking forward to seeing people face to face, and if they're not going to the office, like you were just mentioning from that statistic, one thing for sure that's changing is all these trade shows have been moved to like the Q3 and Q4 of the year. So we're going to have a lot of opportunity to get together face to face and see each other. We've got FRSA coming up, and Best of Success in Western States. But I know that you're going to be speaking at a lot of these events, Trent, but what is the most important thing you're going to be talking about, let's say at FRSA?
So FRSA, we've got a lot of great things that we're talking about. A lot of my team is going to be there as well. I'm talking about critical contract provisions, and I'm going to go through soup to nuts, you know, talk about the basics, talk about roofing specifics, and I'm assuming material shortages will still be an issue, so I'll find some of that as well. You know, I like doing these broad topics because it allows me to kind of at last minute put in some stuff that's timely if need be. So we're doing that. We've got some great courses on, you know, art to get back to your, you know, registration and licensing. We've got some licensing stuff that they need for credits down there. So looking forward to that, and should be good. You know, I've heard a lot of real positivity coming out of that group, and I think that that expo is going to be filled. So looking forward to it.
Yes, I think a lot of people in the industry are. Well, Trent, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate all the insight that you always give for contractors each week. And if you have any questions, you can reach out to Trent directly at cotneycl.com, or you can reach out to us at roofingcontractor.com or wconline.com. And everyone, please stay safe and healthy. We look forward to seeing you next time.